think most people have come in now, so welcome to this 2015. We call it Easter Retreat just because it covers the holidays for Easter here in Australia. Makes it easier for people to take time off. And some of you may know that this evening I won't talk for too long because I'm probably more tired than any of you. I've just come back from a very hectic tour of Indonesia. One city, one night, travelling around, giving these lots and lots of talks to big crowds. Last night, 3,500 people, and spending most of last night signing books. But I'm very happy to do that. In fact, many of these people do over in Indonesia, they gave the tour of five cities a title called Hello Happiness. They choose the title. But I was very happy to link Buddhism and especially meditation to happiness. And every evening I mentioned to the audience, just to tie this into Dhamma, this is not just New Age philosophy, not just running on the happiness bandwagon of our modern world, but telling people the story from the Dhammacheddiya Sutra in the Majjhima Nikaya, where King Pasenadi went to visit the Buddha. It was actually to be his last visit. He would die soon after. And when King Pasenadi of Kosala went to visit the Buddha in the famous Jetavana monastery, after doing his bows, actually he was kissing the Buddha's feet because he loved the Buddha, not just as a teacher, but as almost like a father to the king. And he told the Buddha how much he loved, how much he enjoyed coming to the monastery, the famous Jetavana monastery. And the Buddha asked, "Why do you love and like coming to this monastery?" And the king replied, "Because when I come into this monastery, the monks are always happy and smiling." And the Buddha said, "Yes, that's what you can expect when the monks are having success in their meditation, when they're developing insights." And I love quoting that little passage, which you can read for yourself. It's in the Dhammacheddiya Sutra. Because the Buddha was saying, this is a sign that meditation is working. This is the sign that you're understanding things, that you're happy, and you have a smile on your face. And I wanted to emphasize that because sometimes meditation retreats, sometimes you go on those retreats, and if you're smiling, they think, "You're not practicing, you should sit longer, you should experience pain, life is all about suffering." And true, there's a lot of suffering in life, but the whole purpose of coming to a retreat like this is trying to find the cause of suffering and the end of suffering and the path leading to the end of suffering. And if you have been practicing the path leading to the end of suffering, you should not be suffering so much. In other words, you should be more happy, more joyful. And that happiness of meditation is really, really fundamental. Because that will make it quite clear that why we have a retreat center like this. It's comfortable. And you know, when I first built this retreat center, people said, "It's too comfortable, Ajahn Brahm. You know, we shouldn't have hot water in the showers. We should maybe not even have a shower, just have a pump and just line everybody up and just hose them all down once a morning." And to have your own ensuite in your rooms was one of the battles I had to fight. And of course, now you all enjoy this because it's comfortable, which means physically you should be quite happy. Nice soft beds. And I think Bianca would have explained the schedule to you, which is no schedule. You can get up whenever you like. You can go to bed whenever you like. Basically, no bells. And, I've told that joke too many times about no bell silence. You know, because they haven't heard it before. Some in retreats, they say noble silence. And I say no bell silence. Because If we're going to have a happy, peaceful retreat, then all of these trying to meet some deadline, trying to make it on time for the talk. It was stressful for me this morning, just trying to get the aircraft, trying to get the connection. I took the Batam ferry, you know, from Indonesia to Singapore to rush to get the plane on time. If I had missed that plane, it was tight. I would have been here this evening, had a backup plan, and to get Ajahn Sujata to give the talk. And it was touch and go, but I got there here, okay. But all that sort of stress of time, it does tire you out, and I don't want you to be tired out on this retreat. Instead of getting tired out, that, you know, maybe it's good you come on these retreats because you come with monks who've been meditating for a long time, who have been studying, you know, the Dhamma. This is our life. You know, we're like the professional footballers instead of just somebody who kicks a ball around on a Sunday afternoon. So we know what we're talking about. And many people, they start talking about the middle way, but they haven't got a clue what the middle way really means. And the extreme of Atagalamatanu Yoga, it literally means practices which tire the body. That's what it means, Akilamata. It's tiring it, exhausting it. And the Buddha said, that is not the path. And the opposite path, Kamasukha, sometimes people translate that as sensual pleasures. It's really not a good translation. Ask any Pali scholar, and you know, Ajahn Sujata is next door. You can ask Ajahn Bhumali next time you see him, but he's in Singapore right now. It means the five senses. In Buddhism, they had a special word for the five senses and another word for the sixth sense, the mind. And all that was talking about is the pleasures of the five senses, nothing to do with the pleasure of the sixth sense, which the Buddha was encouraging people to develop. The pleasures of like inspiration. You know, when you hear a really good Dhamma talk, you know, some teachings, and that really gets into you, you say, wow, that's wonderful. You delight in that. It's inspiring, uplifting. It's a pleasure. A pleasure which you're supposed to attach to and really get into because it gives you power and oomph for your meditation practice, for your Dhamma practice, for your life. Any acts of kindness and generosity. You know, when somebody comes along and they really sort of give a big donation, or just like what I've been doing the last 6 days, just giving, you know, everything just to teaching. You know, really, really, really tiring myself out. Well, I don't mind doing that because that's giving. I know some of you say, Ajahn Bhav, you should take better care of your health, but no. No, you've got to give till it hurts. And no, it is hurting. I'm really, really tired. But this is what you have to do. And don't think that's bad for your health. Because if you really give, you know, I give my energy, my time, everything I've got. So, you know, last night signed about 2,000 books. Ajahn Bhav, Ajahn Bhav, Ajahn Bhav. My arm still aches. Well, what do you do that for? Can't you just say enough? No. Because these are people that want to have, you know, their book signed by you. And that's my giving, that's my generosity. I get high off that. I get inspired. I inspire my own self. And I get energy, happiness, joy out of it. This is the happiness and joy which we're supposed to develop. It's not sort of, you know, that part of sensory desire. It's the inspiration. And of course, the meditation can be incredibly inspiring, the highest happiness you ever experience in your life. Even just being peaceful. Coming to a place where you have, you know, no things to do, no decisions to make, no sort of problems, worries, things to sort of solve. This is like a refuge from the world. But when you come here, you can just delight in being in a place which is so free. Many of you have been here before many times. And you say you love this place. Well done. Love it. Enjoy it. Really taste the peace of this place. It's important that we generate that appreciation from the pleasures which have got nothing to do with the five senses. And that is our middle way. It is a happy way. In one of the great translations of by Venerable Jnana Tiloka of some of the Buddha sutras, Every couple of years I read this out to the monks during the, not the monks, the trainee monks during the rains retreat. And that's where it quotes the Buddha as saying, "Monks, this is a path without any groaning." And I love that saying, no groaning, it's an easy, happy, peaceful, joyful path, this path of Buddhism. And if you are groaning, if you are struggling, if you are striving, if it's hard work, you've missed the path. You've gone off the path. This is a path of peace and happiness and joy and kindness. The other really, really, really important part of this path is kindness. Please be kind to the other people in your cottage by being quiet. You might want to speak to them, but do they want to hear you? And the book I was signing sort of the last 5 or 6 days, I'm sick of seeing it now. It was another book of quotes, you know, the Indonesians did. And there was a quote, you know, if you can't improve on silence, then be quiet. A lovely little quote. If you can't improve upon the silence, then no need to talk. And it's hard to improve upon silence. So shh, keep quiet. And don't think that, you know, you need to say something. The other person doesn't need to hear it. They want the quiet, the peace. So shh, and respect the quietness and the peace. And it's so joyful to be in a silent place. Crikey, I know this. It was just so noisy the last few days. You know, in all these big halls with lots and lots of people. And just coming back here, I really, as a monk, I appreciate Jhana Grove too. It's peaceful, it's calm, it's quiet. Please enjoy that. Because when we start to develop the enjoyment, the happiness, then the meditation takes off. Meditation is not a path of pushing through barriers, through willpower. Often I say it's pushing through the barriers with wisdom power. But I'm going to change it this retreat and say it's pushing through the barriers with kindness power. Because the power of kindness is underestimated. How when you're kind to your body, it relaxes and becomes really healthy. When you're kind to your mind becomes so peaceful. And when you're kind to life, you become enlightened. Simple kindness. The opposite is when you are craving, you're wanting it to be different, you're wanting something more. Always demanding, always trying to change things. The fault-finding mind, the mind which wants to attain things. That's the craving mind, the wanting mind. The opposite of compassion and kindness and contentment. Where, you know my definition of kindness, the door of my heart is open to this moment, no matter what it is. Come in. It's making peace with this moment, being kind to it, respecting it. Respecting everything which you experience on this retreat. It won't all be pleasant. It can't all be pleasant. Life is a dance between the pleasant and the painful. And as you've heard me say, another quote in that little book was that pain is just the pause between two moments of happiness, and happiness is a pause between two moments of pain. They dance around each other. You can't have one without the other. You can't have success without failure, failure without some success, night without day, cold without heat. You can't have difficulty without success. So you're going to find in this retreat, you're going to have some wonderful experiences and some terrible experiences. If you want to learn how to meditate, you have to open the door of your heart to both types, to make peace with life. Rather than trying to change life. I think in a previous retreat I just mentioned one of the great little stories simple things to start your meditation off on. A simple little instruction which you can apply to everything during this retreat. The old Emperor's Three Questions. When is the most important time? Now. It's the only time there ever is. Now. I've been teaching that for such a long time. Last month I went to Hong Kong and found out that last year when I taught that little story, the HR manager of Cathay Pacific really was inspired by it, and he started a course on it for leadership skills. And so he's so impressed with how well it works, he's going to sponsor my next trip to Hong Kong next year to teach in Cathay Pacific. So, this is, if only they'd have done that course with German wings. Okay, I have a jug laugh, come on, it's a joke. But it does work. And so, but I've adapted that to, you know, meditation. Now is the most important time. So forget about schedules. Now is the most important time. Some of the other quotes, when somebody asks me, when is the best time to meditate? When is the best time to meditate? Now. And when is the worst time to meditate? Later. Very simple. And it's amazing. You have the opportunity on this retreat to really live in the now. A lot. When you're out there in the world, when I'm out there in the world, you know, you have to plan, you have to look at the clock, you have to make sure you get to a place on time, otherwise you miss your flight. There's so much stuff you have to look on. But here, you don't have to do that. Now, this retreat, you can really live in the now. It doesn't matter if you miss any of my talks, they're all recorded, you can actually catch up on them later on. Now, you don't have to come to the chanting. The only real things you really need to attend to is the breakfast and the lunch. But don't worry about clocks, because you will know when breakfast is and when lunch is. Even if your clock doesn't work, you will know. There's something about the greed, the need for food sustenance. You will know. Look, over in Bodhinyana Monastery, over the road there, the birds always come out for lunchtime. And they're always there at lunch. And after lunch, they're gone. About half an hour before, they're not there. They haven't got any watches and clocks, but they sure know the time when lunch is about. So this is the same with you. You don't have to worry about clocks and about worrying about what time it is. You know when it's lunchtime and when it's breakfast time. So imagine this. You can even put away all your clocks. Hide them. And have 9 days where you haven't got a clue what time it is. It feels like the morning. Feels like the afternoon. Imagine that, being free of time. Ah, just going back to old memories. I used to do that in Thailand when I was a young monk. Didn't have a clock. And didn't know what time it was. Used to have bells going off all the time to find out what the time of the day was. But the amazing thing was you hadn't got an idea of the months. And it was one time somebody asked me, and actually I really honestly did not know the year. I'd lost track of time. Practicing meditation so much, it didn't make any difference whether it was 1980 or 1992 or whatever, who cares? Didn't even know what month it was or day it was. It was very beautiful, that. Trouble was, when I came to Australia, you know, I think after about a month or two, there was one crazy guy came to the temple, the old temple in North Perth, and he had an epileptic fit. So we called the ambulance, and the first thing the ambulance, I was with the guy, the first thing the ambulance men said to this guy, he said, now what day is it? And he didn't know, so they took him away, and I thought, oh my goodness, I better stop this practice and find out, you know, what day of the month it is. Look at the calendar every morning. Because, you know, that had been me. They'd have asked me, I don't know what day it is. So I had to learn how to do that. But it's wonderful. Here you don't have to worry about that. It's only now. That's all you ever have. Now is the most important time. Whatever is, you know, in the brain right now, whatever is in your mind now, that's the only time you have. So don't try and attain something. Attaining something is all about looking into the future. This is where I want to be, you know, tomorrow. Or by 3 days, I want to be in first jhana. By 5 days, second jhana. The fifth day, fourth jhana. And the last day, enlightenment. I just got it all planned. But sometimes people do have their goals. What is the goal anyway? The goal is putting your attention outside this present moment. It's a fantasy. I want to be somewhere at a certain time. So see if you can live in the present moment, and all goals, in fact, if you really get into the present moment, all wanting vanishes. You need a perception of the future to want something. You need a memory of the past to get angry, either yourself or somebody else. When you really get into this present moment business, it's amazing how peaceful you just become naturally. You can't do anything else. You can't want things. You can't do anything. You're stuck in this wonderful place of peace called the present moment. So now is the most important time. And the second of those Emperor's Three Questions is, no, the story was, who's the most important person? But now I say, what's the most important thing to be aware of? And this comes to the heart of meditation. People say, oh, you're supposed to be aware of the breath. Oh, you're supposed to be aware of your body. Oh, you're supposed to be aware of loving kindness. Oh, you're supposed to be aware of the way you're watching the breath. Oh, you're supposed to be aware of your feet when you're walking. Oh, you're supposed to be aware of... And that really confuses people in meditation. So the answer really should be, whatever is in front of your consciousness right now, that is what you should be aware of. The most important person is the one right in front of you. The most important meditation object is the one you're aware of right now. That is such a beautiful lesson in meditation. Because people always think, I should be watching my breath. Or sometimes, you know what happens, many of you have meditated with me before. You get to a stage where the breath is about to disappear, and sometimes you can see these lights in the mind and nimitta. You say, what should I watch? Should I watch this or should I watch that? You've lost the plot when you think like that. Don't choose what you want to watch. The one in front of you is the most important person. Whatever it is in front of your mind right now is the most important meditation object. It's really, you don't choose. You don't want. You don't crave. This is all you have. This is all you can be aware of. Right now, this is all you have. And all this choosing is wanting to do something in the future. And the last part of the Emperor's Three Questions. And sometimes that, you know, you look at these three questions. I've taught them for years and years and years. But like many of these little stories, you know, you never get to the bottom of the incredible well of Dhamma, of just a simple story like that. I always thought the second answer was the most powerful, and I've taken that deeper to not just when I'm talking to somebody, but with my meditation object. Whatever is right in my mind right now, that's really important. If I'm tired, tiredness is important. I'm not going to try and get rid of it. Instead, the third of the Emperor's Three Questions, what's the most important thing to do? So now this moment, whatever you're experiencing right now, is fundamentally important if you want to learn meditation. And lastly, the attitude you have. It's not to develop it, not to change it, not to get rid of it if it's some defilement, or you give it the name defilement. No. The most important thing to do is to care for it. To care for this moment. Kindness, compassion. Because compassion softens, settles, it makes peace with whatever you're experiencing. That's what kindness does. Have you ever seen sort of a really, 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 really kind person come and talk to you? And even like physically, probably the heartbeat goes down, the blood pressure eases, the whole nervous system just relaxes just because someone is really, really kind. And this is just a kindness from another person. Imagine that kindness, you know, coming from yourself, going right into whatever it is you're experiencing right now. It softens it, it relaxes it, it makes it peaceful, and you're meditating. So, really, if you don't want to come to another talk, no more interviews, all you need to remember is now the most important time. And whatever it is in front of your mind, in front of your consciousness right now, it's the only thing there is anyway. So it's important, it's the most important. So don't demean it if it's your sleepy, that's important for you. If you're restless, don't judge it. Just, it's important, it's right here. And the thing to do, don't try and get rid of it, control it, change it, manipulate it. Care for it. Because what happens when you're in this present moment, you give this thing in front of you, whatever you're experiencing right now, importance, and you care for it. If it is some obstacle, some restlessness, some lots of thinking, anger, guilt, fear of the future, anxiety, whatever it is, kindness softens it. It relaxes it. It becomes really peaceful afterwards. Every time I fought any defilement, any craving, any anger or ill will or fear, every time I fought things, they would get worse. And any time I was kind to them, they would get so soft. And I was, as well as just coming back this afternoon, I had an appointment and an old friend passed away and wanted the ashes. I'm scattered over in Bodhinyana Monastery. So we scattered them at sunset, just an hour or two ago. It's a very beautiful sunset over the Indian Ocean. And this guy's son and his wife were scattered at the same place I did the scattering for them. So I had to do this for Max. And it was very, very beautiful. But on the way up there, one of the people said they've got a terror of snakes, like a phobia of snakes. So even though this is not the snake time of year, most of them are just hibernating now. I said to them anyway, you don't have to be worried about the snakes because all the snakes are Buddhist snakes in a Buddhist monastery. So, you know, they're all vegetarians, they won't harm you. Just joking, but it's true. If you care for animals, the animals care for you. If you care for defilements, defilements never bite you. Restlessness never obsesses you. Tiredness just evaporates through kindness. Now try that, because I've been teaching meditation, actually not just, I've been a monk for 40 years, but you know, the first time I taught meditation was when I was a school teacher, and that was in 1973. So I've been, 42 years I've been teaching meditation. And this was teaching meditation to about 900 children in the morning assembly. A lot of guts to do this. Actually, it wasn't really guts, it was just stupidity, because I didn't think anything could go wrong. I had such confidence that, on a Monday morning school assembly, if you remember those school assemblies, every teacher had to take one. And so I took my week of school assemblies with the principals, the headmaster's permission. I said, oh, well, I'm a Buddhist, I'm going to teach some meditation. Said, okay. And so I had 900 children, 11-year-olds to 17-year-olds, you know, boys and girls. And I said, okay. Now I want you to cross your legs, you know, and make your back straight, put your right hand in your left hand, close your eyes, now watch your breath, watch your breathing going in and going out. And the most amazing thing was that they all complied. It was only afterwards one of the teachers asked me, he said, what would you have done if one of the kids started giggling? And it was only then I sort of had a cold sweat, because I realized I was really I was really pushing my luck. Because in a class of school of 900 kids in assembly, if one kid had started laughing, then the whole 900 would have joined in, and I'd have lost them. But every one of them complied, and they were just silent for 5 minutes. You know, this is no exaggeration, just afterwards, in 1973, all these kids from a school in Devon, in UK, they broke out into spontaneous applause, never been heard of before in a school assembly. It was really a wonderful experience, that. But I've been teaching all these years, and sometimes you see people teaching meditation in such a stupid, well, I shouldn't say a stupid way, but a way which just makes people more tense. They don't relax. And they don't get the beautiful peace and happiness of meditation. They don't have a place where people go in and they see all the meditators happy and smiling. They see them so fierce and almost like scary on some meditation retreats, honestly. Sometimes you go in there and you think, crikey, I don't want to be part of this mob. You know, they're just like US Marines, or even worse, they're really crazy, psychotic, sort of some cult I'm coming into. But fortunately, the type of meditation I learned, and especially with a monk like Ajahn Chah, was a very happy meditation. Fortunately, that I got the right type. I had very good teachers. I had good karma to find them. But the happy meditations, many of you have actually experienced, it's so peaceful, so joyful, because what happens when you don't fight, when now is the most important time, whatever it is, right in front of you right now, is the most important. You're not choosing, you're not trying to get rid of it. You're respecting your mental experience in this moment, and you're being kind to it. It means that you are developing your mind. It is not laziness, because this is the way the mind is nurtured. From here it grows. I remember even a long time ago, many meditating monks in Thailand used to use the simile of growing a tree. You put the seed in the ground and you protect it. You don't have to water it, that's the job of the rain. You don't need to sort of shine lights on it unless you're having some hydroponic illegal drug factory somewhere. The sun does that. All you need to do to grow a garden, or especially to grow a forest, is to protect it. And that's all you need to do in meditation, to protect. Basically, to stop you getting involved. Because it happens automatically. When you get involved, then the problems start. As I remember reading, I think in an Air Asia magazine, because I travel around so much, and so I got lots of stories from aircraft, and there was somebody, some pilot, because you've got nothing to do, just spend so much time up there, so just all these stupid books in the front seats, which no rational person would pick up and read. I'd pick them up and see what's in the books, the in-flight magazines. And the Air Asia one was really good because it had sort of jokes in it and interesting stories. And one of this particular story was this guy, a pilot, was going to describe the aircraft of the future. When we've already got drones, they're usually used by military. But, these drones, the automatic pilots, are the aircraft of the future. They don't make mistakes. The computers don't get depressed. So this guy was actually saying, in the cockpit of the future, he said, there will just be two beings in the cockpit. One will be the pilot, and the other one will be the dog. And the job of the pilot is not to fly the plane. The job of the pilot is to feed the dog. And the job of the dog is to bite the pilot if he touches anything. And I thought that was really funny, but the reason I say that, because I'd love to be able to have that pilot and that dog inside your mind when you're meditating. So your job, you know, is only to feed, you know, the dog in your mind, and the dog's job is to bite you if you do something in your meditation, to stop you interfering with it. So the tree can be nurtured and grow by itself. And look, I know what I'm talking about. I've been meditating for such a long time. And many of you check me out. You know, I know I don't sort of deceive anybody. And this is actually how the mind works. If you want to develop your meditation, if you want to sort of experience incredible stuff, you know, really peace, so much stillness. Well, quite frankly, sometimes you think you reach the limit of peace, and then you just go to another level, and you just can't imagine that anything can be so peaceful. And then it becomes even more peaceful. Think, this universe is incredible. How much peace can there be? You think this is ultimate peace. Then you go to a more ultimate peace. And it becomes this fascinating journey, and it's really amazing stuff. You just do that by sitting there and doing nothing. Just having that dog which bites you if you start getting involved in doing stuff. Oops. So this is actually how we nurture our mind, by just making peace and being kind to it. It becomes still all by itself. Now this is why I always like introducing this word stillness. And you've heard me say before that when people talk about concentration, it makes me think, who invented that word? Because that has caused so much mischief in meditation circles, talking about concentration. Concentration is something you do, whereas stillness is what happens when you do nothing. It's totally different. And the way of Buddhism, the way of meditation, is totally different to concentration. It is stillness. Because once your body becomes still, you can sit here for hours, effortlessly. And you will do that. It's amazing just how many people come on these retreats and they come and say, Ajahn, I just meditated for 3 hours. I can't believe I've just done that. It's effortless, it's easy. You don't just say, right, this is it, 3 hours. I'm going to meditate for 3 hours and sit down there and you take a peek, only 1 hour and 10 minutes, damn it. Take another peek, 1 hour and 15 minutes, oh, come on. That is not how we meditate. Real meditation happens so naturally. The body becomes so still, it's peaceful. And your mind becomes so still. For those of you who have trouble with thinking, all the thinking is just you're agitated. It's just the nature of a human mind is to think when it's agitated. So don't try and get rid of the symptoms of an agitated mind. The symptoms are the thoughts. A lot of times, I try and get rid of the thoughts, get rid of it this way, stop it, do this. Ajahn Brahm, can you give me another method for getting rid of the thoughts? So everything you said before doesn't work, or it works for a few weeks and then the thoughts come back again. Ah! We'll get to the core of this. The cause of thinking is an agitated mind. And somehow we've got to stop agitating it. And if you try and get rid of the thoughts, try and stop them, suppress them, push them away, supplant them with something else, do all these tricks, you're agitating your poor mind even more. That's why people find it so difficult. You know, when they start meditating with, you know, teachers who don't know what they're talking about, when they sort of start sort of trying to meditate and they've got all these thoughts going on. So what's actually happening here is just your mind has been very busy, it's agitated. So just leave it alone. Care for your restlessness. There you are, restless. You can be restlessness. It's okay with me. It's not breaking the precepts. You can be restless if you want to. You don't fight it. This is Buddhism. This is not sort of ISIS. We don't fight things. We're kind to things. It's amazing how many people are terrorists when they meditate. Blowing up this defilement, you know, spraying bullets against those hindrances. They're just so aggressive. And that's not the way Buddhas are. We're kind. So when you are kind to your mind, the agitation stops. Kindness cures agitation. You feel relaxed, open. You settle down. And because you give kindness to your mind, real compassion, big time kindness, 100%, it means the underlying cause for all these defilements, especially thinking, is undermined. That's why I like to describe thoughts like waves on the surface of a lake. And if you have waves on the lake, if you try and get your hands and pat down the top of the waves, smooth out all the ripples, you just end up making more waves. That is not how you get rid of waves on a lake. The only way you get rid of waves on a lake is to make sure there's no wind blowing, maybe no earthquakes. So there's no reason for the lake to be agitated. And once the lake is not agitated anymore, there's still waves. But they get less and less and less. You don't do anything. The nature of stillness is for everything to settle down, become really peaceful. As the waves become little waves, as the little waves become ripples, as the ripples just come a slight little shaking of the surface of the lake, until the last ripple, the last little shimmer vanishes, and the lake becomes perfectly still, like the mirror. If ever you've seen lakes which are perfectly still, there's something which it triggers something inside the human mind, like it remembers that this is a simile for meditation in the mind. Sometimes in Chinese watercolors. I remember going to Hong Kong. You know, sometimes people take me for touring here and touring there. I don't like touring. But one day I had no choice. I think the temple was closed or something in the afternoon, and they had to take me out somewhere. And where to take me, I don't know. They took me to a museum. And for once, I really enjoyed the trip because they had these incredible Chinese watercolor exhibitions. Really high quality work. And you don't have to be an aficionado, because once you see things of such high quality, everybody can really enjoy them and appreciate them. I had a really couple of really wonderful hours just looking at these watercolors and just allowing them just to actually soak into you. And there's so many of them were lakes in the mountains. And some of them were the still lakes. And you could see the image of the full moon reflected in the still mountain lake. That is meditation. The lake is your mind. Keep it that still. And it gets more and more still until it reflects the truth of things. The Dhamma, you can see it, only reflected in stillness. And this becomes your journey. Your body and mind become more and more still, deeper stillness, until the lake is incredibly glassy. If you look in any glass mirror at home, there's always a little bit of distortion. It's not really smooth. But imagine that mirror getting even more smooth. Imagine just your mind getting so peaceful that nothing moves. Absolutely nothing. And that happens in meditation, in the deep jhanas. Nothing moves. You never experienced anything that still. And that's where you start to see reflections of the Dhamma. That's where you get to understand the truth of things. That's where you start to get enlightened, through stillness. Which is why that concentration is just the wrong word. Concentration causes people so much pain, so much tiredness and frustration. So please don't concentrate. But be still. And the way to be still is to be kind. And when you're kind, the stillness grows and develops. Sometimes people say, well, if you don't do anything, you don't get anywhere. Absolutely wrong. Absolutely opposite. When you don't do anything, you get everywhere. The Dhamma develops. It grows. The tree gets bigger and gets more branches and more leaves and more fruits. It matures by its own nature. The mind is still, said the Buddha. It only moves because of something outside of it agitates it. Wanting, craving. Just like the Buddha said, this mind is radiant, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. It's only when these defilements, these wantings, getting rid of, not happy with something, those defilements is what takes away its beauty and radiance. So in this meditation, this is what's going to happen to you if you follow the instructions. Now is the most important time. Only time you'll ever have, right now. Really get into that. And whatever you're aware of right now, that is important to you. So it's a wonderful thing. What am I supposed to do? What are you doing now? That's what you're supposed to be doing. Because when we say, what should I do? We say, what should I do in the future? No. What are you doing now? This thing in front of you is important. Whatever it is you're aware of right now is the most important in the world. And all you need to do is to care. Have this beautiful kindness and compassion. Not only will that mean that your meditation will take off, and when it really starts to take off and you get these delightful, beautiful breaths sitting for hours, incredible lights come up in your mind. Wow, what colours. I've never seen anything like that before. It happens naturally. I don't know, maybe one or two of you get into these jhanas. They'll blow you away. Incredible experiences. I really mean that. I mean, this is, they call it in Buddhism, Uttari Manusa Dhamma. Now this Uttari means way, way above the ordinary experiences. And it's there for you. This is how it works. So still, these things just come to you. You try and get them. You try and attain them. You're wasting time. So, this is just what happens. And of course, because a few people do that, that's why I like teaching it. Not all of you will on this retreat. But you keep on coming, keep on understanding, and then you will. It's nothing to do with your abilities. That's the other amazing thing. People said, oh, I can meditate, I can't meditate. That's a lot of gomayang. And if you don't know what gomayang means now, you will learn this in this retreat. This one Pali word which everybody here will soon understand. Go is the Pali word for bull. Mayang is what comes out of the back end of a bull. But I'm not really supposed to say the bullshit word. Oops. So I say gomayang these days, just to get out of it. And it's a nice thing for you to learn as well. You know, so if you're in Buddhist circles, you can say, oh, that's just a little gomayang. And then, and then you can get away with being a bit rude. But this is actually what happens. And people, so anyone who thinks I can't do this, that's gomayang. It's nothing to do with your abilities or even your experience, your age, your gender, or anything. It's just you put the causes in place and these things happen. Just like science. And if you add, was it the ingredients of gunpowder. It doesn't matter whether you're a chemist, whether you've got a PhD, or whether you're just a village idiot. If you put these three things together and add a match, it goes bang. It's just nature. So nothing to do with your so-called ability or experience. You just follow the instructions. Now's the most important time. This experience right in front of me is the most important in the whole world. And I'm just going to care for it like hell. Care, care, care. Open the door of my heart at this moment. You try things like that and you soon get into jhanas. And you surprise yourself. Wow, even me, I can do this. I love telling stories of some of the most unlikely people in these retreats here. And I can't go past this guy who came on a retreat a few years ago. Amazing fellow, because he came with all these tattoos all over him. Think, bit of a long hair, lots of tattoos. And I thought he'd come to the wrong place. Okay, you know, my mistake. I'm not perfect. I don't mind admitting my mistakes. I judged him by his appearance. You know, he was like one of these members of the bikie gangs, like one of these drug dealers. That's what he looked like. But, you know, he joined our retreat, and so, okay, let's see what happens. And he was the guy who got jhanas. That was amazing. I really enjoyed that because I judged him. And now I got it totally, no, wrong, 100%. I thought this guy's going to get nowhere, and he was the star meditator. And it's so wonderful when, and as a teacher, when you see these people come in there and they start describing what happened to them. And it brings me so much joy, you know, that these people, people you wouldn't ever expect, sort of cracked the deep meditations. Brilliant. And it gives me confidence, you know, that I, you know, what I teach actually works. You follow the instructions. And that happens to you. You think, wow, that happened? It works, it's real, yeah. But you have to follow the instructions. You know, when I first started teaching, and you know, a few people started getting into these jhanas, and I would ask them, I remember this, the first person, how come you got into a jhana this time? What did you do? And they said, the first person said, for the first time I really let go. That's what they said. And the second guy, oh, it was a girl, I forget which, I asked them, well, what did you do special? And they said exactly the same words, I really let go. And they all say the same thing, you know, in their own words, but you know, maybe not just exactly, I really let go, but basically meaning the same thing. You really let go. That's what you need to do. So why is it so hard to let go? It's doing nothing. Doing things is hard work. Crikey, being an abbot, running monasteries, running sort of around and all over the place, that's hard work, but doing nothing. Sure, that should be the easiest thing in the world to do. So, can you do nothing? Can you? I challenge you, because if you really do nothing, if you really let go, 100% totally, you'll get into a jhana just in 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You will. That's how it works. Just let go, and just everything just slows down and settles down, and wow. So that's what meditation is. Now, I don't know if what meditation you've done before. You can do the meditation you've done before to start off with, but every now and again, just experiment. Check out what I've been teaching and see if, okay, I'm not going to watch the breath. I'm not going to choose to watch this. Whatever my mind wants to watch, that's okay with me. Because whatever is right here, right now, whatever I'm aware of, right now, that is important. That, nothing else. And number two, I'm going to be kind to this. Beautiful, compassionate kindness. Gentleness, open the door of your heart. Respect. It's amazing how many people don't respect their own body and mind. They push it to the limit. I had no choice the last few days. I was pushed. But you don't have that necessity. You can be so kind to to your body and mind. Don't push it at all. Be kind to it. And just the last piece of advice for you before I'm kind to my body and go to bed is to please, you know, don't worry about how long you sleep, especially for the first few days. So one of the other reasons why you all have your own beds, your own rooms. So you don't need to sort of, it's terrible. If you stayed in dormitories, people have got so much conceit and pride and peer pressure. You know, you always have to be the first one to get up and never the last. You know, the last one to go to bed. You know, that happened here. I remember just these retreats we used to do a long time ago. People would be staying up and they wanted to be the last one, you know, before everyone else went to bed. So they'd be sitting up here and they'd be wanting to be the last one. And they look up, oh God, she's still sitting here. So carry on meditating. It's just still here. And then she would get up and bow, yes, now I've made it, I'm the last one. That's a crazy way to live a meditation retreat. This is not competition against other people. This is learning how to be kind to yourself. So if you need to sleep, sleep. And a lot of you do need to sleep. And so I keep on saying that many of you, and I'm included in this right now, have sleep deficit. And if you have sleep deficit and you try to meditate, that's where you go to sleep. And it's rotten experiencing, just get up in the morning, you try and meditate, you fall asleep. It's just basically a bit of waste of time. So, sleep. That's what the beds are for. You know, we collected a lot of money for those beds. And the mattresses, that cost us a lot of money. So please use them. Make the donors happy that their beds are being well used. Especially for the first few days. So you can really relax. And when you wake up, if it really is wake up well in the morning, you don't really need a cup of coffee. How many of you have a cup of coffee when you wake up, or a cup of tea? Well, I do. When I'm teaching, because that's, you know, I haven't slept enough. I've got to get up and do something for somebody. But imagine, you know, you had a good rest. You don't need the boost of caffeine. You're just naturally alert in the morning. What a wonderful thing that would be. So, you can do this. Have a good rest tomorrow. Or tonight. And when you get up, it doesn't matter what time it is, you can get up, we do the chanting at what time do we do the chanting? 6 o'clock? A bit of chanting if you want to do some chanting. Usually I've only got a junior monk with me, but now I've got Ajahn Nisarada with me, so he's senior enough, he can do the chanting. I'm going to sleep in. I don't know. See what happens. But if I do sleep in, you know, you do the chanting in the morning, I don't know what happens. So sometimes I don't really know. I just wake up. When I wake up, I was taught by Ajahn Chah this, but I don't recommend you to do this. He said that when you wake up in the morning, don't look at the clock, just jump out of bed first and do zippity-doo-dah, what a wonderful day, or the equivalent of that in Thai. Just jump out of the bed and then you look at the clock. The reason I say don't do that, because when you jump up and go zippity-doo-dah, you wake everybody else up the first time, and then we say, oh God, 2 o'clock in the morning? Then you wake them up again with all your curses, that Ajahn Brahm. So no, don't try that. But just when you wake up and you feel good, then get out of bed. If you feel tired, any time of the day or night, after the talk in the morning, or even during the talk, if you know, if sitting in the back over there, if you feel tired during the talk and it's a boring talk, you just stretch out and put your feet on the head on one of the cushions and have a nice nap during my talk. I dare you. Anyway, I think, oh, good on you, great. You know, you've gone past conceit, but. The whole point is, like, be kind to yourself. Look after your body. Spend 2 or 3 days really looking after it, pampering it. we need a rest, have a rest. We need a cup of tea, coffee, juice, take tea, coffee, juices. We need to exercise, go for a walk. And that way you're sort of looking after your body. And after 2 or 3 days, your body feels really light, very happy. And then a meditation really cuts in. You have a wonderful time. So easy. It's caring for your body. So there we go. That's the first little talk. And now it's time. Well, crikey, I thought I'd only talk about a few minutes. But it's just past 9 o'clock. It's bedtime for most of you, especially for me. And so have a wonderful time here. I will give another talk tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, the first real talk. This is just like not aperitif, it's hors d'oeuvres of the main course coming tomorrow morning. Give you a sense of what we're doing here. And it's really easy, don't be afraid, be in the present moment, enjoy every moment of this retreat, and have a wonderful time. Thank you. I haven't got energy for that. So. Okay, so have a good night. Those who want to carry on meditating, this hall is open all day, all night, whenever you want. It's like McDonald's 24/7. So you can always meditate here. Or if you want to go to bed, go to bed. You can always meditate in your room as well if you want to meditate in your room. On the stupas, on the platform, that's a great place to meditate at night. Wherever you want to meditate, the place.